dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. At the moment, as we talk about a lot here, we witness in the very front lines of that war for the free world, our friends, our critically important strategic ally, Israel. I'm thrilled to have with us to discuss what Israel is confronting at the moment in terms of the assaults from Hamas in Gaza and beyond, one of its most articulate and influential leaders. He is Dori Gold, the former ambassador of Israel to the United Nations, currently the president of the very consequential Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, the author of several best-selling books, including The Rise of Nuclear Iran and the Fight for Jerusalem, also now an advisor to the Prime Minister of Israel. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, sir.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be with you.
I'd like to sort of set the stage for this conversation with you, Dori, by talking first and foremost about what is the character of the strategic threat Israel is facing at the moment from, well, let's start with Hamas.
Well, you know, Hamas, people hear the name and they think of a relatively small movement connected mostly to the Palestinian issue, but they don't see the wider context in which it is operating. Hamas originally came out of the Muslim Brotherhood when it was established in 1987, but at the same time, Hamas benefits from connections and support and interaction with two significant developments that are occurring around us right now. First, Hamas is a jihadi movement. It is not a religious PLO. It is a movement that sees itself part of the larger radical Islamic framework of militancy and, as I said before, jihadism. A couple of years ago, in 2004 or 5, the Israel Defense Forces took out of a Hamas headquarters a number of posters which showed a lot about Hamas's self-image. In one poster, they had a pantheon of people Hamas admires. And, of course, there was Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of Hamas. But next to him was another familiar face, Osama bin Laden. And next to him was Shamil Bisayev and Khattab, another fourth person from the Chechen Mujahideen. The fact is that Hamas sees itself as part of that world.
Yeah, the global jihad.
Yes. Today, for example, we have information that in Damascus, in a place called the Yarmouk refugee camp, Hamas operatives work closely with Jabhat al-Nusra, the Nusra Front, one of the key al-Qaeda affiliates now fighting Assad's regime in Syria. By the way, Nusra used to be together with ISIS, and then they split. So you're speaking about a real major partnership with an element of the larger radical Islamist threats that are arrayed against us. Now in the south, you have Hamas coming out of Gaza and working with the jihadi forces operating in the Sinai Peninsula against the Egyptian state. And there have been a number of incidents in which the interior minister of Egypt, the interior minister is in charge of internal security, has charged the Hamas to have been involved in such attacks. There's a village called Mansoura in the Nile Delta where a good number of Egyptian security forces were executed, and the Egyptian Interior Ministry connected it to Hamas, as well as to the jihadis who were there.
And this is a threat, of course, to Israel as well from the south. And then there's Hezbollah from the north and the rockets and so on from Iran.
But I want to say it's part of a bigger regional tapestry. And it's not just Israel, the Palestinians, and Hamas. No, this is much bigger than that.
Understood. And point well taken. What in that sort of very disturbing context is Israel's goal, Ambassador Dori Gold, in the present fight with Hamas? Is it, as some are now calling for, including some who have been in the sort of peacenik camp in Israel, the destruction of Hamas, or is it something else?
Well, the cabinet has not taken a position saying that Hamas must be eliminated completely from the Gaza Strip. There are a lot of reasons for that, not because Israel has any plans on having a dialogue with Hamas. But regardless of the reasons, what Israel is talking about in terms of goals is, first of all, bringing the rocket fire to a halt. You know, we have rockets regularly fired out of the Gaza Strip of increasingly greater ranges. The more potent rockets are of Iranian manufacture, like the Fajr 5, for example, as well as a number of other rockets in the Hamas arsenal. So we want to bring those rocket launches to a halt. One way of coping with the Hamas problem is to degrade their military capacity seriously, so that in the future, you know, this kind of a threat can't be resumed. The second problem, which Israel always knew of, but the magnitude of it wasn't so clear, are these attack tunnels. You know, the tunnels which originate in Gaza territory and then come popping out inside of Israel, maybe to a depth of a mile, mile and a half from the Gaza border. Now, what Hamas can do is send in a squad of operatives, of terrorists, to go into a kibbutz to kidnap people. We found in one of the tunnels handcuffs as well as chemicals for putting people to sleep. These people could be brought back into the Gaza Strip and then ransomed.
Or simply massacred in place.
Or massacred right at their home. So Israel is not going to continue with these tunnels. Now, I should say this. The tunnels originally come from Hezbollah in the north, which we believe also has a certain potential in this area, and they got it from the North Koreans, who, as I'm sure you well know, tunneled under the DMZ to prepare for a surprise attack on South Korea. So this is a big problem, and you have to develop technologies for detecting people are boring out a tunnel below you. I know the South Koreans were completely surprised in the 1970s, when the North Korean tunnels were found.
We're finding a few across our southern border. It is always a surprise and deeply, deeply troubling. Mr. Ambassador, we're almost out of time. I just want to hit a couple of other quick points with you. The U.S.-Israeli relationship seems to be strained at the moment, in some respects at least. And knowing that you share, as I do, a belief that this relationship is of paramount importance to both countries, I think most especially because Israel is at the pointy end of the spear of our fight as well as its own. Talk, if you would, a little bit about the current state of affairs as you see it with respect to Secretary of State Kerry's efforts on a ceasefire and the flow of funds, humanitarian purposes supposedly, of $47 million or so in U.S. taxpayer dollars to Hamas, and the recent episode with shutting down flights, American flights and others, through Ben-Gurion Airport.
Somebody asked me this question about a week ago, and I said, I'm going to save this for my memoirs. Not that I'm going to write memoirs, but in any event, you know, we have a working relationship with the United States. The United States is a key ally for the state of Israel, and we believe that we provide important services to the United States, as well as the United States provides us important aspects of our support and security assistance. But, you know, the one thing about the U.S.-Israel relationship, it is over-monitored. You know, think of a worried mother who puts her hand on her child's forehead because she thinks every 5 minutes, you know, the child is going to have a fever, and she wants to make sure she gives him aspirin in time. You know, we have our differences. There are ups and downs in the relationship. We're sitting in the Middle East, you know, living the Middle East, and sometimes there are people in the West who don't have the same understanding of the region. But, you know, we work closely with the United States, and the U.S. is our key ally, and that alliance goes across decades now. And, you know, we don't think anyone can disrupt that relationship. We're planning to build on it.
Well, we're hoping to help you build on it on a strong foundation, which is to be rooted, it seems to me, in this recognition of the indispensability of this strategic partnership. Ambassador Dory Gold, thank you for the service you've provided your country, and I think to the free world as well, and for joining us to talk about the present crisis you're facing and what you're trying to do to address it for all of us. Keep up the great work, sir. Stay safe and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Faith McDonald with an update on the plight of Christians in the Middle East and beyond. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist, or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined once again by Faith McDonald, who is the Director of Religious Liberty Programs at a wonderful institution in the Washington area, the Institute for Religion and Democracy. She has been actively engaged for many years on behalf of Christians and others subjected to religious persecution. She is the author, among other things, of Girl Soldier, a story of hope for northern Uganda's children. She's been a guest many times, and we're always delighted to welcome her back, though oftentimes the stories she brings are distressing, to say the least. Faith, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be back with you again.
Among the distressing stories we've talked about in the past, but is again, I guess, at the forefront of the news, is what's been happening to the Christian population of Mosul in Iraq at the hands of this group, the Islamic State. What has been going on there and why, Faith?
Oh, well, Frank, this is really heartbreaking. The so-called Islamic State, I even refuse to give them the credit of calling them that because there is no such thing in this Islamic State, in my opinion. It's just in their own grandized view of themselves. They're cleansing Mosul of Christians. The last Christian supposedly has now left Mosul because they were under threat of either having to convert to Islam or to die or to pay the jizya, the tribute to the Muslims. And I don't even think that that would guarantee them their lives. So most of the people did flee, especially from the area of Nineveh. And, you know, if you know your Bible, you know that Nineveh was where God sent Jonah and the whole town repented. So there has been a belief in God in that area, and these people are the descendants of those original people of Nineveh, the Ninevites, as they were called in the Bible. So it's just heartbreaking. When they left, the so-called Islamic State, who are formerly called ISIS and were in Syria, as you know, and now in Iraq, made them give over everything. They handed over their money, their jewelry, their silver, even their extra clothes. And some reports have said they had to leave with the clothes on their backs. Just unbelievable what these people have been through.
Some have actually been shot and killed, according to some reports. And Faith, again, what's the cause? Why is this being done to these innocent civilians simply because they are of a faith that this group abhors?
Yes. Well, as Congressman Frank Wolf said in a floor speech a couple days ago, this is more than fundamentalism or extremism. This is complete genocide and nihilism. These ISIS people don't want anything there but a pure Islamic State. They're actually building a caliphate, you know, and we've heard about this for years, that the radical Muslims, that the Sharia-compliant Muslims were going to attempt to rebuild the caliphate. Well, it's happening right now, and the United States government, at least the administration, isn't trying to do anything to stop it or even to speak in condemnation of it.
And Faith, this is, of course, not unique to Iraq at the moment. What you at the Institute for Religion and Democracy are chronicling is a real plague, basically, of this kind of jihadism and Sharia supremacism at the expense of Christian populations elsewhere in the region. Talk a little bit about a couple of these other places where this has been manifesting itself and what it portends
for these populations. Maybe we can turn next to Syria, another place where this outfit, the Islamic State, or if you will, the Islamic State in Iraq and the Sham, have been operating.
Yes, this has been going on in Syria first and then came to Iraq. And the Syrian Christians have been treated the same way. We had reports of crucifixions and of beheadings. There have been a particularly virulent attacks on people who they say had converted from Islam to Christianity and so therefore were considered apostate. Syrian communities have been devastated. Churches have been bombed and otherwise burned down. And it's part of this same building of the Islamic State, of the caliphate there. And we had a chance to stop it, I believe. The Syrian resistance that is not Islamic like that, made of both Christians and Muslims. But we didn't support them the way that we should have. And then those that they called the Syrian freedom fighters turned out to be, you know, our worst nightmare.
Jihadists, yeah. And I'm not sure whether that opportunity ever existed, but it certainly doesn't at the moment. But Faith, as you've documented in your work, this is happening and certainly has been at the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and in Nigeria and in Sudan, of course, and the Central African Republic and Turkmenistan and Burma and Pakistan. This is, in fact, a blight. And I guess the question occurs, what, if anything, has the Obama administration said to decry this kind of behavior, to say nothing of acting in a manner that might actually prevent it from happening?
Well, you know, if you go back to what's happening right now in Iraq, the Obama administration has said nothing or attempted nothing to help these people. Congressman Frank Wolf has done 6 House floor speeches in 1 week about the surging of the Christians and the other minorities from Iraq. And Congress has passed legislation that's on the president's desk now, a legislation for a special envoy for religious minorities in the Middle East and South Central Asia, passed unanimously by unanimous consent in the House and overwhelmingly in the Senate. But the president now has it, and if he wants to start doing something, then he could start by signing that bill into law and helping these people. Even Muslim neighbors in Iraq have tried to help some of these Iraqi Christians.
Faith McDonald, let me ask you about the church, because it's one thing for the government of the United States to be sort of turning a blind eye to all of this, but it is rather extraordinary. I mean, bizarre is the only way to describe it, that the church itself is also seemingly indifferent to the kinds of things that are taking place here to co-religionists. What's up with that?
Frank, I think that the Islamists have done a lot of groundwork to make that happen, that there's a lot of denial and appeasement going on, even submission, as we would say, because of these Islamists. So there have been church leaders who have been reluctant to speak out, whether because they think that it will make things worse somehow, although I don't know how it could get any worse, or that they think that maybe they'll be the last ones to be attacked if they keep going in that way. But there have been some leaders who have spoken out. For instance, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has spoken out about Iraq, and there are others who have. And I've been a little bit encouraged just looking on Facebook to see how many people have taken as their Facebook profile the symbol, the Arabic symbol for Christians that was painted on the doors of the Christians in Iraq by the Islamic State people to say that this house is now condemned. So it seems as if some people are starting to feel that kind of empathy and to want to show solidarity. But we have to do more than change our Facebook profiles, that's for sure.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I was struck by a recent anecdote about an event at the in the Vatican in which the Pope presided over an interfaith dialogue event and an Islamist imam participating prayed for the destruction of the infidels, and presumably was in the process consecrating the ground. Faith, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you for the great work you do at the Institute for Religion and Democracy. And again, a special thanks to the man you've mentioned several times, Congressman Frank Wolf, my congressman, as a matter of fact, who has been such a hero on all of these matters. We'll talk with you again very soon, I hope. Next up, we'll be speaking with Congressman Stephen King about the border insecurity and what Congress is doing about it or not. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Afte with the Secure Freedom Minute. Congress is trying today to cobble together legislation regarding the invasion of our southern border. Lawmakers badly want to get out of town for a lengthy August recess, and the legislation they are being asked to approve is looking pretty bad. Bad for us taxpayers. Bad for the effort to deal with tens of thousands of alien children and others President Obama has induced to come here illegally in search of amnesty. And bad for the prospects of keeping yet more from coming across our still-open border. Throwing hundreds of millions of dollars, let alone billions of them, at a problem like this without eliminating the magnet of amnesty, both that President Obama has unilaterally engineered to date and that he has in prospect, is worse than irresponsible. It's absolutely reckless. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it is my pleasure, as well as high privilege, to be able to say we're joined by one of the men I admire most in the United States Congress. He is Representative Steve King. He represents brilliantly the people of the 4th District of Iowa, and I think millions and millions of Americans beyond his own district. In the United States House of Representatives, he serves, among other things, on the House Judiciary Committee, specifically of importance to today's conversation, on the Subcommittee on Immigration and border security. Congressman King, it is always a delight to have you with us, but particularly on a day when momentous things seem in prospect in the House of Representatives and perhaps in the Senate as well on the eve of the congressional August recess. We're going to be speaking to you about these things before some of them play out. The program will air after they have. So I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of crystal ball gazing with us. You're an expert in these matters, and we're delighted to have you with us. But first of all, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me on. I always look forward to these opportunities to have these conversations. And of course, we are in the middle of momentous times. And what I would say about the immigration issue as it's unfolding is that we do have many human tragedies on both sides of our border with Mexico. The flow of people coming in has brought the media focus on. We've had higher flows across our border, especially in Arizona in the past, but this has been captured us because they reported that as of June 15th, so far this fiscal year, that's from October 1 till June 15th, we've had at least 57,000 unaccompanied alien children. Many of them came across the border near McAllen, Texas, and were picked up there at that border station. That has brought a focus on this issue in the videos and the stories that have come back from there, and it's overloaded the system. There are also family units that they call family units. That's usually a mother or sometimes a female that's not a mother with a child, one, two, or three children that come over. And then, of course, we have a lot of young males. When you break those numbers down, it works out like this. Of the unaccompanied alien children, and we're dealing with that number that was 57,000, that's probably well over 70 by now, they are 80% male, and they're 83% between the ages of 15, 16, and 17 years old. That means that we're looking at 40,000 or more prime gang age recruitment young men that have been brought into this country under the UAC or unaccompanied alien children standard, which gives them, I'll say, a path into the United States, a parole into the United States. They have to make a promise for a hearing. The Border Patrol hands them a piece of paper that's run off of the printer on the Border Patrol that says you can legally be present in America, but you're supposed to promise to show up for a hearing. Most don't. And that's just the youth. And then you've got those that are 18 and up in the thousands.
This is obviously very, very trying for all involved, most especially those responsible for managing this flow. What do you anticipate, Congressman Steve King, the House of Representatives is going to try to do in response to this crisis and the president's request for some $4 billion to administer these kids and so on?
Well, the discussion began about policy. How do we stop the flow? How do we send them back? How do we deal with and care for those that are here until such time there's a disposition of them in either north or south? And I will just tell you that the debate and the discussion has shifted over to the political cover that members need to go back to their home. And that means that once they get into the mode of, I need political cover so I don't get yelled at very much in a town hall meeting when I go back, then their mind goes off of what the right policy is, and it goes to what's the best political protection for them. And that's a criticism, and I'll tell you that I've been in the middle of this policy intensively. They've stopped looking at good policy.
Do you anticipate, Congressman Steve King, as you say, you've been in the middle of this policy fight for a long time. You've been really a leader for those of us who believe that securing our border is imperative from a national security as well as public safety point of view, and what is being done by this president unilaterally and unconstitutionally, as you say, is a travesty. But do you believe that what we're likely to see come out of all of these machinations, the political cover and so on, is going to be a vehicle for the comprehensive immigration reform bill that you have properly been trying to hold the line against since it passed the Senate?
I am concerned about that. I fear that. There was a Senate Democrat spokesperson that announced immediately if we send a bill like we're talking about over to the Senate, that the only way that it would pass would be if we attached the Gang of Eight's amnesty bill on it and they'd send it back to us. We do have significant risks that will happen. John Boehner has made a strong statement, the strongest statement that he has ever made, that there will be no comprehensive immigration reform or anything that looks like it on any bill that the House takes up. And that would mean, of course, a conference report, as I interpret it at least. I have a little more confidence about that, but political pressures tend to change the meaning of those statements, and we should not leave ourselves vulnerable, especially if we're not going to write the right kind of legislation that's going to actually fix the problem. And I also say, Frank, this president will not secure the border. He will not. He will build the Keystone XL pipeline before he secures the border.
Hell will freeze over before both.
You're right on that.
Congressman Steve King, let me just turn to one other issue, and you've touched on it already, really, but you also serve on the Subcommittee on the Constitution and Civil Justice of the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives. Talk a little bit about this action taken yesterday by the House to initiate a lawsuit against the president over his other, well, not other, one of his other, I should say, examples of extra or unconstitutional conduct, namely with respect to Obamacare. Is that the right thing for the House to be doing and the Congress to be doing under the circumstances, or should we be doing more?
You know, Frank, I think it is the right thing, and there are a good number of conservatives that will disagree with me on this. But, you know, it's today late and a dollar short, but it still should be done. When the president announced that he was going to delay the employer mandate, the implementation of the employer mandate, which by Obamacare statute, by law, signed by President Obama, says that the employer mandate shall commence in each month after December 31st of 2013. President Obama just took his pen and drew a line through that date and changed it to 2014. He has no authority to do that. It is the clearest unconstitutional act that he has committed. They run in varying degrees. That's stark and clear to me. Some of them are arguable and debatable. I guess they'll all be debated. But I think that this marker needed to be put down. Now, I stood up in conference a year and a half ago when this happened, and our leadership announced that they were going to bring a bill to conform with the president's unconstitutional act, which is appalling to me to think that the president could violate the Constitution and we would legalize that, ratify it by conforming. And I stepped up and said, this is a constitutional issue and we must make it a constitutional issue. And they looked at me with that blank look, and now a year and a half later, it's a constitutional issue.
There's a lot of that blank looking going on around here, it seems, at the moment. The deer in the headlight is another way of putting it. Very quickly, Congressman, you've been a champion of the U.S.-Israeli relationship. We spoke earlier in the program with Ambassador Dory Gold. What do you make of what the Obama administration is doing with respect to Israel in this time of need?
Israel needs to have all the allies that she can bring around her at this time of need, and our support needs to be unwavering. And the message that's coming from the White House and from the State Department should be a message of resolve and solidarity with Israel and their necessity to go into Gaza and eradicate the sources of all of the rockets that have been fired out of there and the suicide bombers that have crept through the tunnels to emerge to kill Israelis. I don't see that out of this administration. And John Kerry's welcome in Jerusalem a few days ago was probably the least friendly response I'd seen on Israelis for any American public official in my lifetime.
And deservedly so, I'm afraid. Congressman, we have to leave it at that, but thank you for the tremendous leadership you've been providing on so many of these issues. You are truly the indispensable man on many, including these border security matters. I trust that you will prove successful as well as valued by all of us. And come back to us again, if you would, very soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Any soldier. It could be your father, your sister, your neighbor, or your best friend. Or it could be someone like this soldier who writes, quote, "This is a great thing you are doing here. Keep up the good work." AnySoldier.com has become synonymous with goodwill and great stuff. The troops really appreciate the effort. Take care and thanks again. End quote. Log on to www.anysoldier.com and find out what you can do to help our deployed men and women in the armed forces.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say with one of our colleagues at the Center for Security Policy, a man who is also a senior analyst with the Langley Intelligence Group Network. You can find his writings at lignet.com. He is, of course, Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional with distinguished service at the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of State, and on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Regular here at Secure Freedom Radio, we're always pleased to have him. Fred, welcome back.
Great to be here, Frank.
Let's talk about Russia, Fred. It seems as though the Russian reset, as the president has liked to call it, is being, well, I think of it as re-reset. T-
talk about what Russia is up to at the moment in Ukraine, and does this portend a serious escalation of the conflict there?
Frank, this is a subject that I don't think the American media is giving enough time to, and Western leaders finally realized this week that Vladimir Putin is not going to be cowed by weak sanctions and tough rhetoric. New sanctions are passed against Russia this week, which unfortunately have some pretty major loopholes, but they were an improvement over sanctions passed by the EU and the U.S. in the past. They deal with their economic sanctions, energy and technology, financial and against individuals. Private Russian banks have been exempted. Current arms sales have been exempted, and energy technology on the gas industry has been exempted. So, in a way, I think Russia is going to be laughing at them. In fact, Russia has already retaliated by cutting off imports of food from Poland and other European countries. We're seeing reports that there have been missile fire from within Russia against targets in Ukraine. Putin accelerated his support to the Ukrainian rebels after the shooting down of the Malaysian airliner. International vessels could not get to the crash site, although apparently they got there today. It looks like that's because the Ukrainian army, which has been making gains against the pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine, they stopped their offensive temporarily so investigators could get to the crash site. But looks like the crash site, some of it has been mined by the Ukrainian rebels. The question right now is Russia going to invade Ukraine to relieve or to support the pro-Russian rebels who were in the process of being mopped up by the Ukrainian army? And I think that the prospects of that are very high.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. And that's part of what I wanted to get at with you, Fred, is the Russians are reportedly, according to the United States government now, not only supplying arms to the rebels and evidently training them on some fairly advanced pieces of gear, including the SA-11 that is reportedly the means by which this Malaysian airline jet was shot down, but they are also providing actual artillery support to these separatists across the border into Ukraine. This would constitute, it would seem, an act of war by Russia against Ukraine. And as you say, we're not getting a whole lot of attention on this from the press. And while the European leaders and the U.S. have come together around these sanctions, it does seem as though it is insufficient unto the day, as the Bible says. Do you anticipate, Fred Flights, that the Russians will continue to escalate, including coming across the border in force at this moment?
I do for two reasons. First of all, Putin is extremely popular, and he has the support of the Russian people. Let's caveat that, but the opposition has been suppressed so completely that there's no way for them to express themselves. But a recent poll said Putin has 90% support, and the people polled support what he's doing in Ukraine. The second reason is it is a matter of losing face on the international stage if he allowed these pro-Russian rebels to go under. I don't think he's going to do that. He's been talking a good game right now and secretly providing not just artillery and missiles, but tanks. He's been providing training on these weapons to the rebels. I don't think he's going to cut them off.
Yeah. You know, Fred, this week we also heard that the administration, presumably as part of this reset, finally acknowledged what has been well known and amply documented, I think, for a long time, namely that the Russians have, in addition to the kind of predations you've just described towards Ukraine and threats of various kinds to others in what it thinks of as its near abroad, they've also been violating one of the treaties that they signed with the United States back in the 1980s. I happened to be involved in the negotiation and was at the end quite concerned that it would wind up being violated by the Russians. Talk a little bit, if you can, about your experience with these sorts of treaties and the Russian performance in connection with them, and the role that the State Department, in which you served with Ambassador John Bolton as an outpost of freedom, I must say, the American desk is the way I like to think of it at the State Department during your time there. But the conduct of the State Department over the years of concealing and denying and apologizing and excuse-making with respect to this and, for that matter, other violations of treaties by the Russians.
It's been appalling. The record has been pretty clear that the Russians have been violating these treaties. the State Department just papers it over. The example that I like to talk about is the New START Treaty. And I worked on this when I was with the House Intelligence Committee staff. And the State Department and the Intelligence Committee had explained to Congress why this treaty was going to work. And they had to discuss Russia's compliance with past treaties. And all the classified testimony was pretty negative. And the treaty was written in such a way where there was every prospect that Russia was going to cheat on the treaty as soon as it was implemented. And I know I can't get into the details, but Russia has been doing that. And the State Department under this administration has been ignoring all the instances. This isn't the first violation of the INF treaty or the violation of the New START treaty and other treaties. And I remember there were some senators who were just extremely angry before the New START treaty was put to a vote. Remember, there was a classified hearing on all the ways Russia was going to cheat on that treaty before it was voted on, but it was approved anyway. I'm just happy the administration has come forward and called the Russians on the INF treaty, but I don't think this is enough.
Well, it isn't enough, and there's no evidence that they intend to do anything more, which is probably going to simply reinforce the Russians' confidence that they can do with this and other treaties, for that matter, as they will. And what's more to the point, Fred, this isn't just a matter of, you know, legalisms. These are very significant strategic capabilities, ground launch cruise missiles and apparently ballistic missiles that they're not supposed to have that can be used to threaten our allies in the European and Far Eastern theaters and, for that matter, our forces there. And again, in direct contravention of solemn agreements, and we got rid of our deterrence to these kinds of threats on the premise that they would honor these treaties. A very troubling bit of business. Fred, let me turn to one last thing before we have to let you go. Talk a little bit, if you would, about Senator Pat Leahy's version of a bill on the National Security Agency matter.
Well, we've talked before about the USA Freedom Act, a bipartisan bill passed by the House in response to the Snowden leaks to restrict some NSA programs. It's a bad bill. I think we both agree on that. And I think you and I disagree in that. My view is this is probably the best we can get given the current environment. But I know there's a number of members of Congress who disagree. They think this bill will really hurt national security. Leahy makes the USA Freedom Bill, substantially worse by basically eviscerating the telephone metadata program and trying to force in advocates to oversee FISA cases, even though the FISA judges and experts have said that they don't want that. What's odd about this bill, Frank, is it does not go nearly enough for privacy advocates, for Rand Paul, for Senator Wyden and Senator Udall. And what's even odder is that after the White House went out of its way to endorse the House bill, they changed tactics and then endorsed the Leahy bill. I don't think this bill is going to go anywhere, and I'm under the impression right now that there's so many divisions in the Senate and House that nothing's going to be done to reform these NSA programs, certainly before the election.
Well, I hope you're right on at least the Leahy bill not going forward, and I think it would probably, from my own view, be a good thing if the other one doesn't as well, Fred, but we'll be talking about it more for some time to come, I suspect. We appreciate very much, as always, your insights on these matters. Fred Fleitz with the Langley Intelligence Group Network and a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.